Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
$40,000
on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Girl,
the thing.
Change my whole dress.
Girl, the thing.
Great gowns. Beautiful
gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to the Every Outfit podcast. Apologies that this episode is coming out a bit later than usual. We are recording it later than we usually do for two reasons. One, Chelsea literally just got off an airplane. And also, I needed to watch the live stream of the And Just Like That auction. The day finally has come.
I did watch a bit of it on the plane before we took off.
Well, I was shocked at the beginning of the auction. The woman auctioneer, who was very talented, was like, hey, if you're here in Southern California, come on down. We have coffee. And I was like, what the fuck? We were at this And Just Like That preview a week ago, and not a one Julian's Auction employee was like, hey, come in person to bid on this. I didn't know that that was possible. I didn't know they had an office in Los Angeles. Turns out it's actually in Gardenia.
I did know that they did live auctions, but for some reason I thought the And Just Like That auction was like relegated to online only. I don't know why I thought this, but I would have been there.
I am glad that I wasn't there, because quite like your feeling that if you ever went to the Mosaic Church, you would feel the need to become a member and be a part of this alleged cult. I worry that if I had been there at the Julian's auction in person, I would have put us into tremendous credit card debt.
Buying Miranda's old clothes. Even as I was watching the auction happening live, I was discovering new lots in the And Just Like That auction, like Miranda's beach cleaning outfit from that time she went to Malibu. Remember when a woman at her AA meeting like recruited her to go clean up seaweed on the beach?
Yeah, you sent me the description. They were like, this is the time that Miranda cleaned up seaweed. We had a conversation this morning and we were like, okay, we need to get serious. We need to figure out the lots that we're going to bid on, and we need to agree on the maximum bid. And boy, were we wrong about what stuff was going to go for.
Oh my God. I thought that people would spend money on the clothes and stuff, but I thought that only freaks like us would want the really morbid, really esoteric lots, like the Mr. Big shower knobs. We did bid on those, but we were unwilling to pay $800.
So I had put a maximum bid of $450, and I was the top bid until the live auction actually happened. Chelsea was with her best friend, and I called you on the phone interrupting your time together, and I was like, do we go up to 600? What do we do? I need a sanity check. And listeners, we went up to $650, and some other psycho, was it one of you guys, spent $800 on this? I'm sorry, we just couldn't.
You know what? Wouldn't it be so amazing if we were outbid by someone that actually wants to give them to us?
Oh, it's a Samantha and Smith Jared diamond ring situation?
Exactly, because what other fucking sicko, like, who wants this?
Well, I hope that one of our dear listeners is one of the psychos that spent $2,500 on a prop copy of Carrie Bradshaw's Loved and Lost.
So nuts. We also bid on the Love Samantha card that came with the flowers that she sent to Mr. Big's funeral. There was five of them that were auctioned off.
Okay, so this is a two-day sale. So three of them were auctioned today. Two more will be auctioned tomorrow. Our thought was to bid on the cheapest and hooiest lot of them. Ironically, somehow the Love Samantha prop C was cheaper than the Love Samantha prop D. Go figure. However, That was all child's play until the live auction. Every card went for more and more money. The first one went for $896, which we thought was insane.
That's a bargain.
Because the second one went for $1,152, and the last one sold on the first day of this auction went for $2,880.
So nuts.
But, Chelsea, there was one more lot that we decided to bid on, and I do have some good news. We were able to buy the X, Y, and Me mug.
For how much?
For a whopping $200. And let me tell you, I put in that $200 bid, and when it got to the live auction, my finger was ready to press $250 if need be. Didn't have to. No one else bid.
It's kind of fitting that we're walking away from this auction with Che Diaz's mug, and that's all.
Well, the other crazy thing is that the Che Pasa lot, which was the lot of items around Che Diaz's fictional television show, Che Pasa, went for nearly $900. Who are these psychos?
Truly.
Now, I was able to look up, because I was curious, out of everything that sold today, what was the most expensive thing that sold? Because when we were initially looking at the different lots, the most expensive thing was this Mr. Big Rolex, which a listener explained to us is actually fake.
But how do they know that? I say this is someone that doesn't know shit about watches.
Well, when I was watching the live auction, the auctioneer was like, this is a prop, which to me confirmed that it was not a real Rolex, which is why this lot went for only, $25,000.
Oh my God. If someone bought that just for the watch,
at that point, you're not even getting a deal on a Rolex.
Right.
I don't understand what's happening. This is a mental illness. I came out of today with the belief that auctions are gambling for women and gay men.
Well, also, it's tied to And Just Like That, which was its own form of like psychosis and self-harm, really, for the viewer.
Well, that's the only way to explain that the second most expensive thing sold today was a collection of 97 vinyl records that were in Carrie and Big's apartment that went for $7,680.
Why? But wait, that lot doesn't include the Hello It's Me record, right? That was a separate prop.
Yes, that was its own separate lot. And they went out of their way to say that it was a prop, which makes me think that there's no actual vinyl record in there.
You could buy one for $2 on eBay.
I will tell you, you know who really won? Is I think all of the vintage furniture dealers that were bidding on the furniture from And Just Like That.
What, you think those were like more reasonable prices or maybe more value for your money?
I definitely think that there was a level of person bidding and buying those things that understood the value, and they were probably undervalued, and they can definitely flip those items. Certainly more than the person who spent $3,500 on Carrie Bradshaw's personalized stationery.
This is so insane.
Guys, are we okay?
Clearly not.
We thought we would be the most deranged people in this auction.
As it turns out, there are even sicker fucks than us. Anyway, we have hotline calls to answer. We have questions from Instagram to answer.
So let's jump in. Let's be honest. Who isn't going through it at the moment? It's rough out there. Now, I'm a big proponent of therapy, but sometimes even I can acknowledge that isn't the whole answer. That's where Talkiatry comes in. Talkiatry gives you access to real psychiatric care with licensed clinicians who can diagnose and prescribe medication if it's right for you. It's a simple way to get effective treatment right from home. That's right. Talkiatry is a 100% online psychiatry practice that provides comprehensive evaluations, diagnoses, and ongoing medication management for conditions like ADHD, anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, OCD, PTSD, insomnia. I have so many friends who have ADHD who cannot find consistent medication management, and I've told them all about Talkiatry. All 800 plus clinicians are in network with major insurers, so you can use your existing insurance instead of paying monthly subscriptions or out-of-network costs. With Talkiatry, you can meet with a licensed psychiatrist who takes the time to understand what's going on, builds a personal treatment plan, and supports you over time with consistent evidence-based care. And because you continue with the same provider, you're not starting over each visit. Your treatment can evolve with you, so you're actually making progress over time. Head to talkiatry.com/outfit to complete the short assessment and get matched with an in-network psychiatrist in just a few minutes. That's talkiatry.com/outfit to get matched in minutes. The people want to know, Chelsea, and I do as well since I was gone this weekend. Please give us a report about Madonna at the Abbey.
Okay, so Madonna made a club appearance at the Abbey. For those of you who aren't gay and for those of you who don't live in Los Angeles, the Abbey is the biggest gay club in West Hollywood and perhaps the country. And Madonna came, she didn't perform, but she like got behind the DJ deck and like played a bunch of songs from her new album, her new single, some unreleased stuff. She played Hung Up. She looked hot. She looked amazing. And what else? Oh, she played Thief of Hearts from Erotica, which I thought was cool. But the crowd was very fun. It was lots of It Girls, Julia Fox, Addison Rae, Cara Delevingne, that kind of vibe. Every gay man I know also.
You did text me about your evening, and unfortunately, because of my dyslexia, you were trying to explain that our friends Patrick and Michael were there, and I mistakenly read it as thinking that Michael Patrick King, Daddy MPK, was at the Abbey.
It's really sad that he wasn't, or at least I didn't see him. He may have been. There were some like elite power gays in the mix for sure.
You had quite the evening because you went to Lily Allen first.
I went to Lily Allen first, and then actually I saw Lily Allen again at the Abbey. Because, I mean, think about the crowd. Like, all of the gay guys I ran into at Lily Allen also went to the Abbey directly after.
And you told me that Trisha Paytas was Madeline.
Trisha Paytas was Madeline, our girl. I love that I tried to surprise Lauren with tickets to this concert for her birthday, but she booked a last-minute trip on that day. You would have loved to see Trisha in person. She was perfect, obviously.
Well, we're going to see her next weekend, so it's fine.
I didn't tell you, but she canceled her show.
Shut the fuck up.
No, she can't. No, I swear to God. Tad got an email from the like Ticketmaster or whatever, like yesterday.
She canceled on the obscure Indio Casino?
I know. So I think like we should go to Palm Springs another time. I mean, if you really want to go, we can still go, but I feel like we might as well go when there's something fun to do. Like maybe Deborah Vance is performing soon.
I mean, I'm surprised that you're not suggesting that we fly to Trisha's London date instead.
Anyway, I love how I tried to get you to Trisha Paytas, like in both scenarios, and neither of which worked out for you.
It's not meant to be.
But Lily Allen was great. That was a really fun show. And really like wild because she just did the album top to bottom. No encore.
Wait, we had this discussion and you were convinced that she was going to play her hits in the encore.
No. Fuck You would have made sense thematically, but no. She did have a string quartet play all of her biggest songs like as an opener, which was cute.
Okay. I mean, I commend her for committing to the bit.
But yeah, it was a fun night. You were missed.
Thank you. And I guess I will miss Trisha Paytas, although I saw that she's not only going to be on Euphoria this season, but seemingly in tonight's episode of Hacks.
Oh, that's cool. Someone asked us what a good entry point would be for Trisha Paytas. Do you have any recommendations? Because I don't really know. Like, I am less familiar with the lore of Trisha as other people. I've gotten into her because you and Tat are obsessed with her.
I think your best bet is to just find a video on YouTube that explains the lore of Trisha Paytas. Like, there's a very good video, I don't know who did it, but they charted the rise and fall of Frenemies, which was a podcast that she did with Ethan Klein, which was sort of my entry point to her that gets into her problematic nature.
But even before that, like, I did see a clip of her on the Ellen DeGeneres show like 10,000 years ago, because isn't she in the Guinness Book of World Records for being like the fastest talker or something, or the fastest reader? Or
yes, she spoke very, very fast. I mean, this is a woman who's just obsessed with being famous, and through just raw manifestation and HPV was able to do it.
And charisma, let's be real. Anyway, speaking of divas we love, we have another question. Thoughts on Helena Bonham Carter being recast on The White Lotus?
So yes, over the weekend, I think it broke that even though The fourth season of The White Lotus is underway and filming. Helena Bonham Carter has left the cast, which was pretty shocking because while not unheard of, it is quite rare for an actor to be fired while filming is going on.
Yeah. Some shit must have gone down.
Yes. HBO even released a statement. They said, while filming just underway on season 4 of The White Lotus, it had become apparent that the character which Mike White created for Helena Bonham Carter did not align once on set. The Mike White created for Helena Bonham Carter feels quite pointed.
Yeah.
Just reading between the lines.
Oh, totally.
They later went on to say, this role has subsequently been rethought, is being rewritten, and will be recast in the coming weeks. Well, it didn't take weeks to be recast, did it, Chelsea?
No, Laura Dern was announced maybe 2-3 days later, if that. There was a brief rumor that she was going to be replaced with Jennifer Tilly before that, which I'm kind of sad that that didn't happen.
I know. I gotta say, I love her work on The Real Housewives, but I love her work more in movies and television. And that would have been what felt like a fitting replacement. But I think that was just a rumor that then actual semi-reputable Twitter outlets started reporting.
Right. Also, I don't think we ever talked about Jennifer Tilly's incredible Housewives reunion look. The best look anyone has ever had at one of those, as far as I'm concerned.
Having watched almost none of them, you're like, I can confidently say.
You don't have to watch them. Like, I see the clips on Instagram. It's not as if I don't know what these bitches look like.
So Jennifer Tilly, if you don't watch these clips on Instagram, was wearing a ball man dress with her face on it.
And like the most insane hair I've ever seen.
Look, would we have loved for Jennifer Tilly to be on The White Lotus? Yes. There's always room for season 5. However, it does make a lot of sense that Laura Dern would come in. She has a pre-existing relationship with Mike White. They made a movie together called Year of the Dog. I think more people probably know that they created a show together called Enlightened that ran for 2 seasons. And then also Laura Dern is not a stranger to HBO because Enlightened was on HBO, and then she was also in Big Little Lies, which allegedly is getting a 3rd season.
What happened there? I mean, I know Jean-Marc Vallée, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
He died, and that sucks. But, like, you would think that they would just replace him because that show was so popular. Although the 2nd season, does anyone remember what happened in the 2nd season?
Well, Jean-Marc Vallée died after the 1st season.
And so they already replaced him.
Yes. I think it was Andrea Arnold who ended up directing the 2nd season, which I think did not go as smoothly as one had hoped. But it's David E. Kelley who wrote both seasons.
And Laura Dern was one of the standouts from season 2, as I recall.
To your point of like what even happened in season 2.
Meryl Streep was there.
Meryl Streep was there avenging her son's death, I guess. And
at the end, they all went to the police station. That's literally all that I remember.
Well, and then Laura Dern's husband lost all of their money and we got the infamous, I will not be rich.
Right.
So Laura Dern joins Vincent Cassell, Steve Coogan, Chris Messina, Kumail Nanjiani, Sandra Bernhard, Heather Graham, Max Greenfield, and Rosie Perez, among many, many others. Truly, I was looking at this cast list. I'm like, I think this is the most cast they've ever had for a season of White Lotus. And the 4th season will follow a new group of White Lotus hotel guests and employees over the span of a week taking place during the Cannes Film Festival.
Feels Altman-esque.
But I was thinking of other examples of actors who've been replaced either before filming or during filming. And I could only think of 2 examples. One is Ryan Gosling, who got fired from the film The Lovely Bones because he was supposed to be...
I blocked that movie out.
Like most of us. He was supposed to play Saoirse Ronan's father. And he'd be young to play Saoirse Ronan's father now, even at that age. Like, him in his early 40s would seem too old to be the father of a teenager now. Certainly 15 years ago, whenever that movie came out. So he was like, oh, I'm someone's father. I'm going to gain a bunch of weight so I look older. But he didn't tell Peter Jackson, the director. So, and this is according to him, he's told the story many times. Subsequently, he showed up on set 60 pounds heavier. And Peter Jackson was like, you're fat. And he was like, yeah, isn't that great? And Peter Jackson went, no.
The audacity of Peter Jackson, of all people, to fat shame.
And to replace Ryan Gosling with Mark Wahlberg. Also, I think the most infamous example of this happening, probably for the better of the film, is that Back to the Future shot for 5 weeks with Eric Stoltz as Marty McFly, and it was not working. And they fired him and had to reshoot 5 weeks of filming.
Wow.
With Michael J. Fox. Because I guess Eric Stoltz was taking the role too seriously.
Well, clearly someone made the right call.
Absolutely.
Okay. Next question. Can we talk about this Lady Gaga Doechii song?
No.
We forgot about it in our pop star roundup last week because that's how little impact the song had on me personally. Although seeing the video provided some interesting context, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, the song is exactly what I would imagine a song with the two of them would be for the Devil Wears Prada soundtrack. Like, it's almost as if they reverse engineered the song.
Yeah, like, I know that you don't watch Drag Race, but, like, often on that show, RuPaul is filming a music video for a single, and, like, the challenge is all of the queens, like, have to be in the video. And that is what this video looks like to me, and that is what this song sounds like to me, like a RuPaul single.
Well, I have to say, they use a particular part of the song towards the end of the song itself in the trailer, right? Which is the part where it's like, you were born for the runway. I'm not going to sing. I can't sing. But like, that is the least compelling part of the song. So at least when I watched the music video and heard the full song for the first time, I was like, well, this is more interesting than what I originally heard in the trailer.
That's true. But I can so see the thought process. They're like, we need a song like Madonna's Vogue, but it can't be about Vogue because this is Runway Magazine. So we'll make it about runway.
And you're walking down a runway.
I don't know. There's just something about this sort of like ballroom vibe that just, I don't know, doesn't work for me. In this year, you know, like 15 years ago, absolutely. But, and the same can be said for the clothes, really.
It didn't feel authentic. When I was saying, like, it feels like this song was reverse engineered for the Devil Wears Prada sequel promo, that's what I mean. It doesn't feel authentic, but it feels appropriate for this film.
I did like the ball gowns that Miss Claire Sullivan designed for them, though, which was like a real Galliano throwback. That was cute.
So I guess this is all to say we were whelmed.
Yeah.
All right. We have our first hotline call.
Hey, this is Chris in New York. I might be telling on myself. This might just be a me thing, but I kind of find it lazy and uninteresting when a sequel just slaps on the number 2 as the title. And especially with The Devil Wears Prada 2, Sex and the City 2, it feels like they could have gone with something a little bit more interesting. And so I was wondering what you would have done. Talk soon. Bye.
We are in an era where it is rare to get a 2 for a sequel. Like, I feel like now franchises love to do part 2, like Dune part 2, or a colon, like Captain America, Civil War, Mad Max, colon, Fury Road. And I'm kind of surprised that The Devil Wears Prada 2 doesn't have a colon and a subtitle.
Yeah.
So mine would be The Devil Wears Prada, colon, that's all. Since it is the catchphrase that people have been using the most in all of these brand deals and brand sponsorships.
Okay, I hear you, but I feel like that's all would be perfect for Devil Wears Prada 3, the third and final film in the trilogy, that's all. It feels like a little soon for that's all, I feel.
Well, we were talking about all the brand stuff a couple weeks ago. What was the line that you were like, is this an iconic line?
Did someone eat an onion bagel?
All right. So yeah, Devil Wears Prada, colon, did someone eat an onion bagel?
See, I would steal the headline for the New York Times review, which was Rhapsody in Cerulean.
Ooh. I was thinking of the creativity in the 60s and 70s with sequel titles like, you know, The Return of the Pink Panther, The Return of the Devil Wears Prada could be interesting.
Or we could take inspiration from I Know What You Did Last Summer and I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, like The Devil Still Wears Prada.
Now that is good. Yeah, I was going to say, thinking about the best and worst sequel titles, I think there's been no more innovative franchise than The Fast and Furious, because you've got Too Fast, Too Furious. So I thought maybe Too Devil, Too Prada.
Devil Wears Prada 2, Tokyo Drift.
Well, they also have The Fate of the Furious, you know, The Fate of the Devil Who Wears Prada. Now we're getting a little...
See, I think we need the vibes of Miss Congeniality 2, Armed and Fabulous. Terrible movie, great title.
See, I was thinking about maybe the worst sequel title, and that goes to the sequel for Now You See Me. Because it's not titled Now You See Me, Now You Don't. It's just Now You See Me 2. However, for the third film, they did title it Now You See Me, Now You Don't, which I think they did because Dan Harmon, the creator of Community, did a viral comedy piece where he found out that the sequel wasn't called Now You See Me, Now You Don't, and like lost his mind.
It is crazy. The best sequel title, I think, is Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again. Like, that's the dream.
For the colon titles, I agree with you.
Or Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit.
Another colon title. The reason why often films just have boring numbers to them is because the IP is the title itself. So I was thinking about franchises that do end up changing the titles for the sequel. And I think Analyze This to Analyze That is pretty good.
Yeah, I agree.
There's also the infamous story where James Cameron went in to pitch a sequel for Alien, and he just wrote the word Alien on a whiteboard, then wrote an S next to it, and then made the S a dollar sign, and like all the executives lost their minds.
Not the worst idea. But Sex and the City 2 was kind of a missed opportunity because like it actually needed like a colon thing because like it's so different than the world of Sex and the City that we're familiar with. Like it really should have been like Sex and the City 2 Escape from New York.
Ooh.
Because that's what it is. Anyway, next question.
Okay, you've heard of my newfound love of live auctions, but in Just Like That, prop auction only happens once in a girl's life. That's why I use Whatnot to get my daily fix. Whatnot is the number one live shopping app in the US. It's a live shopping marketplace where you can find unique items live. Deals drop live daily, so you get real deals in real time. Imagine dozens of live streamers with their own QVC show. That is what is going on Whatnot. You can search by brand or type of clothing like vintage or athleisure. You can find everything from jewelry to makeup. If you can think of it, there is probably a Whatnot seller selling it. Vintage Western, Y2K Fairy Core, 80s inspired Bangers Party. These are all Whatnot auctions happening right now as I record this ad. With Whatnot, you almost never pay full price. Shop name brands across makeup, perfume, clothes, handbags, jewelries, and more, all without the retail sticker shock. This is the best place to find great deals on products you love. Download the Whatnot app today and get free shipping on your first order. Just search WHATNOT, Whatnot, in the App Store and start scoring amazing deals. Will you do a podcast episode on the original Devil Wears Prada? I assume someone who is not a Patreon subscriber submitted that question because we have done an episode about the Devil Wears Prada. We did it way back in June 2024, and it can be found on our Patreon.
And we will be doing another VIP episode about the Devil Wears Prada 2 because we realize like we can't talk about it next week because next week is also the Met Gala.
And also we realize that Anne Hathaway released two movies within a week of each other. So it will be a Devil Wears Prada 2 / Mother Mary / a discourse on the other three movies that Anne Hathaway has coming out this year. So look for that, hopefully on Monday.
Okay, we have some Sex and the City questions. The drama, but it's the Sex and the City brunch table. What is the worst thing they've ever done?
All right, we know the worst thing that Carrie has ever done because we saw it portrayed in season 3.
The Natasha tooth.
Well, yes, sleeping with a married man and then disfiguring his wife when trying to run away after getting caught.
Yeah, I would say sleeping with the married man in his home and getting caught in his home and then, yes, disfiguring his wife. Definitely the worst thing that Carrie's done. Not even debatable. Although another thing popped into my head, which was Carrie watching videos of that guy fucking models that did not consent to be filmed. Also a very drama-esque thing that she's done.
Wow, yeah, I forgot about that.
Like, that's technically a crime.
Well, let's also not forget that even after many painful dental surgeries, Natasha's tooth is still a different color than her other tooth. Okay, for me, the next one I thought of was Charlotte. And I feel like with Charlotte, you would think she would have a really low stakes, worst thing she's ever done. But seeing through the show how secretly transgressive her sex life is, I feel like she's done some bad shit stuff in her life that we don't know about. like sabotaged a coworker or like destroyed a piece of art for some reason. Or perhaps she tried to poison Bunny, but it didn't work.
She did something even worse. She swindled an elderly woman out of her apartment. That's the worst thing she's ever done.
Okay, all right. I was trying to use my screenwriter brain and think of some other stuff not seen on the show, but you are correct.
Okay, Samantha, I think it's the pattern of fucking married guys.
Oh, so this is so funny. You were picking stuff actually on the show, because for Samantha, I was just making up some stuff.
We're not making shit up. It's the worst thing they've ever done. Not a theoretical scenario.
Okay, well, sorry, I misread that question.
Okay, what do you think the worst thing that Samantha has ever done is?
I think Samantha killed a woman and stole her identity. Yes.
She did not.
You don't know that. I believe that Samantha committed a talented Mr. Ripley or a Don Draper, if you will.
The way that you thought the question was like, if you were to write fanfic about the worst thing that these girls had ever done. Oh my God. Okay, I don't even want to know what you have for Miranda.
No, my fictional thought for her was something that was very low stakes. Unless we want to consider getting finger banged by Che Diaz.
Yes, yeah. Obviously that's the worst thing she's ever done.
While her best friend pissed herself and she was still technically married.
Yes. And unfortunately, that Snapple bottle not available at Julian's auctions.
Sarah Jessica Parker was like, that's mine. That's from my archive. So basically, we're saying that all of the worst things that the Sex and the City women have done is around infidelity, essentially.
Except for Charlotte, who's stealing old bitches' houses.
Well, she had to marry Trey to steal his family's apartment.
Okay. Next call.
Hi, Lauren and Chelsea. I have a hot take on the series finale. We all know the famous line when Miranda sits at the diner with the girls in Big and says, go get our girl. Okay, so my hot take is, what if Miranda didn't give one rat's ass about Big and Carrie getting back together, but she was just so pissed that she went to Paris that she was willing to do anything and everything to get their girl to come back home to New York? Please discuss. Thanks, bye.
That's an unbelievably cynical take, but I dig it. I mean, she did want her girlfriend back in New York.
I agree with it. We know that she doesn't fuck with Mr. Big. She was just like, I cannot have this bitch call me one more time from a payphone in Paris. With the time difference, this bitch is calling me at 4 a.m. We gotta get her home.
Well, I was gonna say, I believe the scene that happens before this between Miranda and Carrie is the one where Carrie admits to Miranda, which is not the friend I would admit this to, that when she is sad, Carrie often wonders what being in these situations would be like if she were with Big. And I guess we're supposed to understand that that was Miranda's hook of like, you know what? I fucking hate Mr. Big and I will sabotage their eventual marriage. But for right now, I can use this to my advantage. So wait, is this Miranda's the drama? Is this the worst thing Miranda's ever done?
No, this is a good thing that she did. But Miranda, forever a pragmatist, she's like, this motherfucker is the lesser of two evils.
Wait, how could we not say that the worst thing Miranda did was sabotaging Carrie's wedding by saying to Big, I don't understand how you could get married, and then keeping that a secret from Carrie for 6 months?
I don't think that's worse than having an ongoing affair with a non-binary stand-up comedian after you've been married for like 20 years.
And Carrie's coworker and possible boss?
Yeah, that's not worse. Sorry.
That was ill-defined.
Okay. Someone asked us, does the finality of the And Just Like That auction make you more bittersweet about the show ending? No. Not for me. I think it needed to end after season 3. I obviously wish the finale involved fewer turds, but we can't always get what we want in this life.
I've joked about how this auction has made me realize how much work the art and prop departments put into the show. So the auction more makes me sad of the lost potential of And Just Like That.
For sure. And also, I hate anytime that people lose their jobs, especially these talented props people. I'm sure they're fine, but still.
Yeah, I mean, look, it being a not great show, a show that people weren't expecting, was great for our business, but we didn't want to hate the show. We wanted to love the show.
We did want to love the show. And as someone that doesn't enjoy being a hater, contrary to, I'm sure, what some people think, it did involve emotional labor talking about this show as much as we did for as long as we did. So I'm at peace.
And after tomorrow, yes, we can finally put In Just Like That to bed. Oh, wait. No, we can't. We have to answer this next question. Do you ever wonder why they never made Rock and Che Diaz have a gender identity scene?
Yes, I've thought about this many times.
Logically, this makes sense, but I'm going to answer this question with another question. Is this really a scene we wanted to witness?
Did we want to witness Miranda on her hands and knees cleaning up turds?
Good point.
Like, just saying. Yeah, I think they showed a lot of restraint in not doing that. Because And Just Like That often did veer into after school special territory. And a trans-affirming scene between Che Diaz and Rock really seems like something that they would have done. But my theory is that Charlotte kept them apart.
That's what I think, too.
She's like, you may be trans, but you will not grow up to be like Che Diaz, so help me God.
Fair enough. Okay.
Imagine Che Diaz, like, giving Rock black market hormones.
Talk about very special episode.
Charlotte finds syringes behind her Madame Alexander dolls.
Who's writing fanfic now? Sorry, where my mind went to is like Harry accidentally finds the hormones and starts dosing himself.
Oh, God.
You know that's what they would have done. I'm thrilled to welcome back one of our favorite sponsors, Honeylove. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, you've heard me swear up and down about their Super Power Short. Now I'm back to discuss another Honeylove product I can't live without, the CrossFlex Activity Bra. Have you ever wanted the comfort of an everyday bra with the support of a sports bra? You've got it with the CrossFlex Activity Bra, which is the ultimate support bra for everyday activities and light to moderate movement. I know my podcaster lifestyle may seem like I have infinite time, but I'm often running around all day, so the bra I put on in the morning has to unfortunately or fortunately go with me wherever I'm going that day. From a Pilates class, to a meeting, to rolling around with baby Morty, even date night. What bra can do all that? You guessed it, the Honeylove CrossFlex Activity Bra. If you find yourself reaching for a sports bra on a daily basis because of the support and coverage, but want something that's actually comfortable and designed for all-day wear, the CrossFlex Activity Bra is the solution you've been searching for. Curious about Honeylove's bras? Honeylove is now offering a crossover triple bra bundle. So if you want a full refresh on your top drawer, you can get huge savings by buying three at once. Treat yourself to the most advanced bras and shapewear on the market. Use our exclusive link to save 20% off Honeylove at honeylove.com/outfit. That's honeylove.com/outfit. After you check out, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Experience a new standard in comfort and support with Honeylove. All right, on to the next voicemail.
Hi, Lauren and Chelsea. In case you didn't know, Slater has a new album out called The Worst Girl in America. And on her song Crank, she does this sound that's like, and it's like a kind of moan weird sound. And the internet is saying that she sampled it from Carrie Bradshaw in that episode. I think it's All That Glitters when she comes home from the gay club and is in bed with Aiden. Listen to the song, mash it up with that clip from Carrie. I would love to believe that Slater had that deep cut and sampled Carrie Bradshaw in that semi-cringe moment. Let me know your thoughts. Okay, bye.
So for those who haven't heard the song, this is what the listener is referencing.
Okay, how about Carrie?
Here's my favorite thing is, you texted me and you were like, Lauren, we need to rip Carrie making the porn noises. And I was like, unfortunately, I already have that clip ready to go because I used it in our Valentine's Day episode, which was talking about our favorite sex scenes. And I used it for our category best heterosexual sex scene. And it goes a little something like this.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Give me some of that.
Okay, this is not a sample of Carrie, but of course this was inspired by Sex and the City. There's no question in my mind.
Yeah, it might be Slater doing
an interpolation of Carrie's porn noises. Slightly, but it's pretty on the nose. And also her whole persona as an artist is so rooted in the Y2K era. Like she is drawing a lot from Britney and Kesha, but also Courtney Love and Indie Sleaze and all of that sort of stuff. Like she has watched Sex and the City 10,000 times, no question.
If it is the actual Carrie clip, I'm just disappointed that more of it wasn't used.
Well, maybe she'll do a remix. Okay. We have another voicemail.
Hi, Lauren and Chelsea. This is Katie, longtime New York fuckette. My question is this. How bad do you think Carrie Bradshaw's apartment smells? Love you guys.
Oh, because of the cigarette smoke?
Of course, because of the cigarette smoke. Not because of her Diptyque candle. And you know, no amount of Diptyque can offset smoking a pack of Marlboro Lights a day while sitting behind a computer screen.
For 20 years, basically.
Yeah. As someone that also used to smoke a lot and smoke indoors a lot, I bet it smelled nasty as fuck. I bet her clothes are nasty. That's real talk, because that shit will absorb the smoke in a way that other things won't.
Well, considering that Batsheva adjacent hazmat suit that she wore to smoke it in just like that, yeah, she's aware of the damage she did to her clothes and her apartment.
Although I personally don't find the smell of cigarettes to be that gross, but to each their own.
Okay, next question. Heated rivalry cast. Good or bad brand move to attend the Met Gala?
Good move. Obviously good move.
Yeah, I don't think it's bad for them to be seen at the Met Gala.
Great move for Saint Laurent, who I assume will be dressing Connor's story, who is one of the few people there who just naturally looks like one of the statues in the Greek and Roman wing at the Met.
Yeah, and Saint Laurent is the brand ambassador supporting the Met Gala this year. And Connor Story is a brand ambassador for Saint Laurent, so it makes sense that he will be there.
Hudson Williams, I feel like he's been doing a lot of stuff with Balenciaga lately, but also he opened that D-Squared show. D-Squared could just like pay him a freakish amount of money. Anything is possible.
Well, when Pier Paolo was at Valentino, he always had a very strong presence at the Met Gala. I assume now that he's at Balenciaga, he will have a similar presence at the Met Gala. Even though no other brand has been confirmed other than Saint Laurent, it feels like a year, given the theme and given that it's the first year that the exhibition is happening in this permanent gallery, that all of the big brands have bought tables this year. There are some years where brands sit the Met Gala out. I don't feel like that's going to be this year.
We shall see. Also, do you want to give a studio update?
The studio is coming.
We've been saying that for years now. Do you want to give a specific update or perhaps an excuse as to why this hasn't happened yet?
Guys, this is really embarrassing to admit, but we built a soundproof studio only to figure out that it's not big enough to shoot video content in.
Look, you can use that room for other things. That tiny, tiny room.
We have found a location to be the Every Outfit studio.
Okay, you're kind of skipping over the part where we spent months looking for office space in the valley.
That's true. We came very close around the holidays of getting an Every Outfit HQ. It was perfect. It was literally equidistant from where Chell and I live. It was walkable.
I'm still pissed about that. We did not get it because someone was willing to sign a 5-year lease, which obviously we couldn't do.
We couldn't do because we're dreaming bigger. We assume that we will have outgrown that office 5 years from now, but who knows? This is all to say we have found a production space, but then came the next obstacle. We have spent truly since last fall trying to source the curtains for the studio. That also, now that it's coming out of my mouth, feels like an excuse, but it is the truth.
Well, we've placed the order and it's happening.
It should be done in a month from now and Every Outfit TV will be on its way. We should explain that because there was a Wall Street Journal article discussing the fact that because every podcast is video now, that listeners are feeling abandoned in the original audio format. Every Outfit TV is supplemental content. Those that love the podcast, it is going to remain for the foreseeable future an audio format.
But we will film some episodes. We'll film the Sex and the City episodes. And then we will do other episodes that are centered around more visual stuff, the Met Gala, obviously, things like that.
And that will be available on our subscription services, but obviously we are going to clip things out and you can see it on social media.
It's also been really wild basically trying to figure out how to produce a cable access fashion show, which is completely unlike anything I've ever worked on in my life.
No, we're somehow the talent, the producers, the art directors, but yeah, I mean, we hope to deliver something really special. We certainly need to, given the fact that we spent 2 years teasing this, but...
Oh, guys, and thank God my chelitis cleared up. I have no idea why. Don't know what caused it. Don't know what fixed it, if anything, but I will look not totally disgusting on camera, hopefully.
Yeah, don't worry. Your dermatologist doesn't know either why you had it and why it went away.
These fucking grifters.
But we are trying to make Every Outfit TV the most luxurious experience when it comes to video podcasting because we each have our own grievances with video podcasts.
Yeah, especially around visual stuff and lighting and stuff like that. I feel like we're probably the most annoying people that this podcast studio has ever had to deal with because like we come in with our own lighting person. But I'm sorry, I need that like Barbara Walters shit. I cannot look haggard.
And also my pet peeve is when people record at multiple studios. Like I enjoy the Ringer podcast and all of the shows that they do, but they have 15 different sets. And like a show like The Rewatchables is done from 3 different sets and it freaks me out. Like, I don't know what it is, but it gives me anxiety when I'm like, oh my God, it's a different set this week.
See, what gives me anxiety is when people are sitting in front of shelves that are sparsely decorated with decorative objects and air plants.
Air plants?
Yeah. Do you know what an air plant is?
No.
It's a plant that doesn't require watering.
Oh.
I'm sure you've seen them at Silver Lake dining establishments.
I have indeed. I just called them succulents. Yeah, but clearly in our research, there is one podcast set decorator who goes around and makes every podcast look like a library.
Yeah, a library with no books.
The other podcast set that really stresses me out is the one for Armchair Expert, which is the only set I've ever seen that is deeper than it is wide.
I don't think I've seen that one.
And you never will. So anyway, Every Outfit TV coming soon, ... still.
And guys, we promise this is the last year that we will talk about the Met Gala, not on video. Never again.
Unless something happens to the curtains and then another 6-month delay.
Okay, next question. Can you discuss Beef season 2? Why, yes. We both watched it.
I ripped through it in a weekend. I loved it.
I really enjoyed watching it too, although I would say it started in a better place than it ended.
Oh, it definitely in the last 3 episodes goes completely off the rails.
And I don't want to spoil the ending for anyone, but I will just say that I have some logic questions about the larger crime that was revealed at the end of the series and how exactly this nonsensical conspiracy works.
Don't worry about it. Just look at Charles Melton and his beautiful face.
God, that man is beautiful. My God. It's shocking. It's like Connor's story.
And he plays my favorite trope in media, which is the high emotional IQ himbo.
Yeah, he is a Smith Jared.
But almost like even more golden retrievery than Smith Jared. But I don't know. I really enjoyed at least the first half of the show that felt a little more grounded.
Well, Carey Mulligan was great. And it was also important representation for a certain kind of like Doan wearing Cutter Brooks shopping, John Darien loving kind of British woman.
I mean, this is a show that is built on how petty grievances can ruin people's lives and like the subtleties within that. And in this season, the subtlety in class differences, in even explaining where each of the couples live, right? Like this takes place in is it a golf course? Tennis club?
Yeah, I think it's a golf club.
It's a country club that is in Montecito, which for those who don't live in California is also called Moneycito. It's Kris Jenner has a house. Oprah has a house. This is where Oprah exclusively lives.
This is where the American Riviera Orchard or what was Meghan Markle's?
That's what it was. There was a name change, but I did
not. Yeah, now it's called As Ever.
But anyway, the country club is in Montecito. Carey Mulligan and Oscar Isaac live in Ojai, which to your point of like, that is a very specific elder millennial type of couple, especially one that probably lived in Los Angeles at one point.
Oh, for sure.
And decided to unplug and live in Ojai.
And start a bed and breakfast. That's literally like the millennial fantasy.
The bed and breakfast that they cannot get off the ground.
It's that or doing the Sandra Bullock Schitt's Creek apothecary.
Right.
The practical magic apothecary.
I was like, that's what Sandra Bullock has been doing the last few years. That's why I haven't seen her on screen. And then you have Kaylee Spiney and Charles Melton who live in Ventura.
I thought Carey Mulligan was the most evil of all of them at the beginning, but by the end I realized that it was her. She's way worse.
Yeah. Again, the premise of the show, other than people having beef with each other, is this idea that it's just people's worst instincts, right? Instead of giving someone the benefit of the doubt, it's like, what if I thought the worst of you? And what happens from there?
Totally. It's also about money and how evil and corrupting and stressful it is. And it really hits if you do miss The White Lotus this season. It is a very similar vibe.
I think even better because I think it really reveals the who's above you game. In the sense that no matter how much you achieve, there's always someone who has more than you, right? For Charles Melton and Kaylee Spiney.
Whatever her name.
Priscilla Presley.
Yeah.
To them, Oscar Isaac and Carey Mulligan have everything because they have this big property in Ojai. He drives a Porsche and they don't even have health benefits. And yet Oscar Isaac and Carey Mulligan are completely underwater, trying to keep up with the Joneses in terrible amounts of debt.
Yeah, it's a stressful show, but a good one.
But it also feels like we're in such a renaissance for film and television of dealing with the current moment. I know this was a complaint of ours that like every director we loved was just making films set in the past. And it was like, hey, we'd really love your commentary on what's going on in this moment. And the idea of Oscar Isaac and Carey Mulligan fighting and screaming at each other about not seeing Top Gun Maverick because the other one had COVID, like, delighted me to no end.
Well, it's skewering millennials and it's skewering Gen Z, I would say, really, really well.
Since I watched the show a couple weekends ago, it's given me my new vocal stim, which is that moment when Carey Mulligan and Oscar Isaac are fighting and Oscar Isaac imitates Carey Mulligan.
Oh, not so, hello.
That just plays in my head over and over and over again.
We are thrilled to have Casper as a sponsor of our podcast. Casper makes reliable, high-quality mattresses designed to deliver consistent, comfortable sleep night after night. Casper's mattresses are highly rated by Consumer Reports, and out of 99 mattresses, Consumer Reports named Casper's The One Mattress their top-rated all-foam mattress of 2026. I was first introduced to Casper through their dog bed. I had one for each of my dogs, and they loved it. And then I graduated to their mattress topper to make a daybed we have in Morty's room that much more comfortable. Now I've graduated to my own Casper mattress, and I don't know what I was doing with my life before Casper. I have the dream, and the name says it all. It's a hybrid mattress that helps solve tossing and turning, which is a huge issue in my own marital bed. Paul loves to toss and turn, which wakes me up. It's a whole thing. But our new mattress pairs responsive springs with ergonomic support zones, so the dream keeps you aligned and dreaming all night. Casper offers a wide range of mattress types, so whether you like your mattress firm, soft, or somewhere in between, there's something for you at Casper.com. If you are in the market for a new mattress or a mattress upgrade, head to Casper.com and save up to 20% on the mattress you deserve. Casper's mattresses are built to be durable and long-lasting, so you're not replacing your mattress every few years. Their products are designed to withstand the test of time, maintaining support and comfort over the long haul. I can attest, I only bought a new Casper dog bed with my second dog because I gave my first one to Chelsea. And Casper has their 100-night risk-free trial, so you can give Casper Mattress a try risk-free. Although with 110-plus 5-star reviews, I'm sure you're going to love it like I do. Right now, save up to 20% on mattresses when you go to Casper.com. One last time, that's Casper.com and save up to 20% on the mattress you deserve.
Okay, next question. Predictions for Taylor Swift's wedding, please. Who would you choose to make her dress?
I mean, it's probably going to be Oscar De La Renta or someone very boring.
There's definitely a good chance that it will be someone very boring, yes.
But who would you want to design Taylor Swift's wedding dress?
I would go with Alessandro Michele for Valentino because if her engagement ring is any indication, she wants something kind of old-timey. This bitch loves that. She wants something super romantic. She wants the fantasy. She might even want like a big poofy skirt. And if she's going to do that, like let that man be the one to design it.
We've talked about how it's unnecessary for the weekly episodes to be on video, but I wish, listeners, you could have seen Chelsea's face when she said a big poofy skirt, almost disgusted.
No, I think a big poofy skirt can be great. I'm just saying it can really go sideways with a wedding dress. Also, I think Vivian Westwood could serve a similar function for her. They also do a big poofy skirt. It'll also be kind of romance novel, historical. You know her. She's going to want to wear like a little choker and have her hair half up and half down and like do some shit like that. But I think there's also a possibility that she could do some like Ralph Lauren type shit, you know, which would be boring, but would be very her. What I hope she avoids is a Versace type thing.
Well, whose Versace would it even be?
The in-house design team, probably.
Yeah, I mean, they did Angelina Jolie's wedding dress, which was a poofy wedding dress.
Which was incredible. That was great.
Well, what made it incredible was the veil that was embroidered with their children's drawings on it.
I'm not trying to slander Versace. I just like, Taylor Swift has this impulse sometimes to wear brands like that and to wear brands like Aria and stuff. Like, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if she was like, my wedding gown is Aria.
So the wedding is happening July 3rd, which I will say I do associate July 4th and that holiday weekend with Taylor Swift. So this feels very appropriate.
Yeah, I think she's going to do something in Rhode Island.
Well, that was the rumor. I mean, there's stuff that is leaking out, like the wedding date. There was also a rumor that Michael Rubin, who does the white party, had moved his white party to July 1st to not conflict with the wedding. TMZ debunked that. But for some reason, a lot of outlets are reporting that this wedding is happening in New York City, which I kind of doubt.
That would be smart, though. I don't think they can have this wedding outdoors or that they should have this wedding outdoors.
I mean, they both have the money to buy out any place, anywhere. She's already got the two private jets. She can jet people off anywhere they want to go. The rumor is that the date was sent out. This is according to TMZ, but there's no location. And so the thought is maybe that people are going to meet in New York and be bused somewhere else. I hoped not to Rhode Island.
We'll have to wait and find out.
What I want to know is if Blake Lively is going to get invited.
Of course she's going to get invited. Why wouldn't she?
Because there's rumors that they've had a falling out in their friendship.
Since when?
Since the Justin Baldoni lawsuit and her getting dragged into the lawsuit.
Okay, but since that happened, she released that song Canceled, which was about how much she loves Blake Lively and is ride or die.
Well, in that case, all of her daughters will be flower girls, I'm going to assume.
I'm sure they will.
I'm sure, here's my prediction. Taylor Swift is going to have a few bridesmaids, but like 18 flower girls. Every single one of her girlfriends who has a daughter, flower girl.
I can see it. Okay, next question.
Speaking of daughters, Emerald Fennell daughter or Sam Levinson son?
Obviously, Emerald Fennell daughter. I'm sorry, if I have a Sam Levinson son, that means my life is basically being Rue's mom in Euphoria, and I'm not cut out for that shit.
Well, I guess, what are we trying to allege here? Because they're both provocateurs who many have said are style over substance auteurs. So I guess, who are you going to pick? And controversially, and against who you picked, I do fuck with Sam Levinson's oeuvre more than Emerald Fennell's. I like Assassination Nation. I've seen Malcolm and Marie. From my memory, I like the beginning of Euphoria, and I have a son. So I guess Sam Levinson's son.
I don't know if these pregnancies should be carried to term. All right, moving on. Thoughts on the Generation Young Lean music video? It's incredible. It's insane. You watched it, right?
Of course. I mean, it gets incredible at the 4:18 mark.
No, you're insane. You don't think the beginning of the video is good?
The beginning of the video is a short film.
Sure, but not an annoying one.
No, I mean, anything set at a boarding school, all men in uniform, you know, makes one think of school ties. The internet tells me that it was inspired by a Japanese film called Blue Spring. But where the music video gets incredible, as I said, is halfway through the 7-minute video, is this unbroken shot that's a push in and a pull out of all of this choreography of these schoolboys in uniform dancing around Young Lean.
I don't think anyone has ever looked cooler than Young Lean does in this video.
Here's my question for you. Do you like the song?
I like the song. Yeah.
I think the video is stronger than the song, perhaps, but that is the point of a good music video.
Oh, for sure. And like this director, Romain Gavra, he is such a genius. Like, I remember where I was when the video for MIA's Bad Girls came out years ago.
Yeah.
He's like one of the greatest.
And boyfriend of Emily Ratajkowski.
It reminds you how impactful a music video can be.
But we should also shout out the choreographer, Damien Jalet, who I think is equally the reason that this music video is so successful.
Okay, what's Lauren's take on Nine Inch Noise?
Chelsea, have you listened to Nine Inch Noise?
I haven't.
Wow.
No, I know, I should have, and I meant to, but I forgot.
I love it. So Nine Inch Noise is the fusion of Nine Inch Nails, which at this point is just Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, who is his partner in all of their score work, with Boys Noize, and they have now formed Nine Inch Noize, which is a collaboration that started on the last tour, where Boys Noize opened up for Nine Inch Nails, and then a certain part of the concert was Atticus Ross, Trent Reznor, and Boys Noize together remixing existing Nine Inch Nails songs. Most successfully, Nine Inch Nails Closer. They then were announced to play Coachella, and then it was announced that a album was going to come out in between the two weekends. And when they performed at Coachella, it wasn't just Atticus Ross, Trent Reznor, and Boys Noize. Trent Reznor brought his wife, Mariqueen, out, and she sang along with him. And the album that they released is this mixture of the live performance. Like, a lot of it starts as the live performance, and then it goes into studio recordings of these songs. There are no new songs, just remixes and reimaginations of Nine Inch Nails songs.
Okay, that's cool. And thank God someone finally explained it to me.
Yeah, I mean, if you are blessed and cursed to still be performing the songs that you made 25, 30 years ago, you might as well make it interesting for yourself.
You raise a good point. Okay, we have an update.
If you remember, was it our last hotline call? No, it was one around Christmas.
Yeah.
Our hotline episode. There was a caller discussing the fact that her friend had a pair of racist earrings.
That were racist and also cursed.
Because a lot of bad stuff happened around them, and they believe that the earrings were the cause of it. And we asked for a lot more details, which were provided to us. This person did call back. The call is 4 minutes long, so we're just going to recap what was said.
Yes. Okay, firstly, the earrings are racist because it's like an articulated figure of a black man with like googly eyes and a loincloth. They then were taken to a Santeria high priest in Denver.
Well, they live in Denver, or the person who has the earrings live in Denver. The friend called us. They contacted a Santeria high priest based on our advice of like, just donate it to someone who collects this stuff. It was not explained how that went from what we suggested to contacting a Santeria high priest.
No, I think I said something to the effect of like, you should find someone who knows how to decurse them. If they're cursed.
Right. That was the big question. They happened to find a Santeria high priest that lived in Denver, where the person who has the racist earrings lives. So the caller booked a trip back to Denver for this visit. And guys, there's so many twists and turns in this story. The earrings are not cursed.
They are, however, racist.
Of course.
And the Santeria guy was just like, just throw them away.
Yeah.
Like, just get rid of them.
Yeah, he wasn't so concerned about the racist earrings because they weren't cursed. He, however, delivered the information that I couldn't exactly follow whose wife. I believe the wife of the person with the racist earrings is actually the one that is cursed.
Yeah.
And that is why all the spooky shit was happening. And I don't want to yuck this listener's yum, but it did kind of feel in this call that the high priest was trying to sell you something, because he was like, look, the earrings aren't cursed. Your wife is. And guess what? I know how to uncurse her.
So you're going to have to bring her back in here. I feel like you may be getting scammed, but maybe not. Who knows?
They also further explained, because specifically in the call, they were like, Chelsea will know what to do. And you were like, what the fuck does that mean? So they've explained that because you were a lesbian, they thought you might know what to do. And they also thought you specifically might have something cursed in your home as well.
Well, I do. I have this like Pierrot, like porcelain clown head that I've been scared to get rid of. But anyway, I got it in upstate New York.
Where is that in your house?
It's like in this downstairs closet by Tat's studio. Anyway.
So there we go. That's the update.
Okay, next question. Have you ever seen the movie Mermaids with Cher? Isn't this something that we constantly talk about? Or do we talk about it not on the podcast?
I'm probably in both places. I've seen the film Mermaids, but not in a minute.
I've seen the film Mermaids probably like 5 times. So I'm very familiar with this movie.
The thing that stands out to me the most are 2 things. It has, to me, one of the most brilliant character details, which is that Cher only makes her children hors d'oeuvres, which is supposed to represent that she lives such a transient lifestyle because she moves her children from town to town that she can't even commit to making her children a full meal.
I don't know if that necessarily is about her transient lifestyle so much as her blind spots when it comes to parenting.
Same, same. Tomato, tomato. There's also this uncomfortable IMDb trivia. For those who haven't seen Mermaids, the film is Cher. She has 2 daughters, Winona Ryder, and a very young Christina Ricci.
When did this movie come out?
1990 or 91. I know that because Winona Ryder was dating Johnny Depp, and Christina Ricci met Johnny Depp on the set of Mermaids because he was dating Winona Ryder. She would then go on to play his love interest in Sleepy Hollow and then even have a sex scene with him in a Sally Potter film called The Man Who Cried.
Oh, that's so creepy when you think about it.
Yes.
It's also confusing because Mermaids is set in the 60s.
Yes.
Yet it's named Mermaids because A, Christina Ricci loves to swim, and B, Cher dresses up like a mermaid for Halloween in this movie, but is the most 80s ass mermaid costume that I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah, but it takes place in New England, right?
I think so.
I think New England in 1990 was still stuck in the 60s. They were 20 years behind.
I love this movie. Great performances by both Cher and Winona Ryder. And it's really about the tension of this mother-daughter relationship because Cher's kind of a bad girl. Cher's kind of promiscuous, whereas her daughter, played by Winona Ryder, is this extremely uptight, extremely religious.
She's a Jesus freak.
Jesus freak. Yeah. And there is this really incredible blowout fight in that movie between Cher and Winona Ryder that is truly some of both of their best acting.
I sent you this, but you didn't reply to my text. But there's something that's been going on with Winona Ryder over X the last week, which is someone posted these photos that I think are around 2002 era Winona Ryder from some photo shoot. And I guess people were surprised at how large her breasts were. And then people felt the need to add the fact that Jamiroquai gave a quote a long time ago that he had to break up with Winona Ryder because her breasts were too big and she wanted to have sex too much.
She seems cool.
So there you go.
Okay. Top 3 Rosie O'Donnell film roles. Shall we determine this together?
Sure. I mean, there's only about 8 movies.
That's not true. There's many movies. Did you ever see Riding the Bus with My Sister?
Oh, yes. Isn't that a TV movie? Are we considering the TV movie?
Yes, but it's a feature-length film. That was a joke. I do not think that's her best performance, although she did do a lot.
For those who've never seen it, just imagine Rosie O'Donnell doing I Am Sam, basically.
All the real Rosie heads have seen this movie, but I would say that her best performance is The Flintstones, A League of Their Own.
Now and Then?
I think it's probably Now and Then, although I think that people really fell in love with her because of Sleepless in Seattle.
Right.
And if anyone is a master at the best friend sidekick role, it is Rosie O'Donnell. And most of her movies fall into that category, aside from Riding the Bus with My Sister.
And Exit to Eden.
And Exit to Eden, which also great.
Oh, talking about sequel titles, There was a movie called Stakeout, of which she was in the sequel to, which was called Another Stakeout, which is a genre of sequel titles, right? Because you have 48 hours, then another 48 hours.
Why did I think you were going to say the Flintstones, like Viva Rock Vegas?
Where she's a cop with Richard Dreyfuss and they have to go undercover. So she has to pose as his wife and hilarity ensues.
I've never seen that, nor did I ever watch the American Gigolo TV series.
I did because I love John Bernthal.
I should because I love Rosie O'Donnell and American Gigolo.
No, you shouldn't, Chelsea. As someone who watched it, it's none of the fun parts of American Gigolo. And it also, it presumes this. It presumes that the events of the movie American Gigolo happened.
Right.
But John Bernthal is Richard Gere and has been released from prison in a contemporary timeline. So then they have to like reconfigure the original American Gigolo timeline to be overlaid in the 90s, early 2000s.
Right. Okay.
And then to explain why John Bernthal is a sex worker, or the Richard Gere character that he's portraying is a sex worker, they're like, he was pimped out by his mother and horrifically, like, sexually abused. And it's like, this is none of the things I want from American Gigolo, by the way.
No. And he was also living his best life in that fabulous apartment, fucking hot bitches like Lauren Hutton.
Instead, who does Rosie O'Donnell play? She plays a cop. Like, she has several genres that she does very well, which is, like, the loudmouth best friend.
Cop.
Cop. Yeah, because she's a cop in American Gigolo, Another Stakeout, and Exit to Eden.
She has that vibe about her. And she had that same sort of gruffness in A League of Their Own, also.
She's also great in a Ted Demme film called Beautiful Girls.
Yes, she is.
Which is a small role, but important, and I think one of the better Rosie roles. And that was a film that they made a lot in the 90s, which is like, you know, I'm going back for my high school reunion to my small town and I'm dating this girl, but I don't know if I should marry her. And oh, I just ran into all of my high school friends.
It's true.
Okay, we have another call.
Hi. So I wanted to call in and tell a funny story and then follow up with a question. I am a professional dominatrix and I have a client that came to me with a role play and they said they wanted to reenact The Devil Wears Prada and I would be Miranda Priestley. I cannot wait to basically whip a man while yelling "Laurels for spring." And it got me thinking, I wanted to know what you guys thought about fetish wear in fashion. See you later.
Are gay guys now hiring dominatrixes to like dress up like Miranda Priestley?
I more thought that this guy's mother must look like Miranda Priestley. I mean, goals, honestly.
Yeah, what a great gig. And if you listen to this podcast, like, I assume you're prepared to play Miranda Priestley. Like, you know her snappy one-liners.
Yes, I too look forward to you whipping this guy as you say, "Why is no one ready?" And while you do the entire Cerulean Blue speech while you're also doing cock and ball torture on this person.
So funny. What do we think about fetish stuff in fashion? I mean, it's been such a huge part of high fashion for so long at this point.
Yeah, I was trying to chart the beginning of it. Obviously, Vivian Westwood. You could also make the point that motorcycle biker style of the 1950s would influence what we consider the beginnings of fetish style and leather daddies, of course.
Yeah, actually, when I saw Lily Allen's show, she wore a really, really amazing, like, maroon vinyl 16 Arlington dress that was very, like, tight, form-fitting, constrictive with these giant, like, pointy breasts, like cone breasts. Gorgeous.
Which leads us to the other pioneer of fetish wear and fashion, which would be Jean-Paul Gaultier.
Yes. I think all of the best fetish stuff, it's all made by the same guys, this team of leather artisans called Whitaker Malum. And they did all the stuff for Alexander McQueen, all the stuff for Alan Jones, all this stuff for Dallara now. And anytime there's something on the runway that is leather or vinyl or fetish clothes, basically, they are the ones that are constructing it because it's just too specialized.
And then Mr. Pearl?
Mr. Pearl, of course.
If you're looking at the corset side of high fashion fetish wear. Also, I would say Richard Quinn, especially if you're talking about florals for spring and latex and fetish.
Ooh, yeah, totally. Totally. You should dress your sub up in a full Richard Quinn gimp look, a floral look.
And then I think in the last 10, 15 years, the people who have mainstream just casually wearing latex are the Kardashians.
Yeah, because it fits on their bodies. But also, I have to say, I am glad that we're past the indie sleaze harness over clothing phase of fetish fashion. No disrespect to Zaina Bain, who is a genius, but it's hard when you see people wearing that kind of stuff that aren't really
in the lifestyle.
That aren't in the lifestyle. Exactly. Walk the walk.
Taylor Swift.
Yeah, exactly. Walk the walk if you're going to do it. Or better yet, walk your sub down the street on a leash with your Zaina Bain harness.
Talk about predictions for Taylor Swift's wedding. All right, we got a question. Who's your old Hollywood crush?
Who's yours?
Well, I didn't want to go obvious with James Dean and Marlon Brando, so I'm going to say Burt Lancaster and Anthony Perkins.
Interesting. I'm going with Marlena Dietrich.
Yeah, that checks out.
The riz that woman had was truly off the charts.
Okay, we have another hotline call.
Hi, this is Mandy. I'm a fuckette. I was thinking about this after listening to this week's episode, but does anyone else remember that reality show that was on in the early 2000s called The Swan, where like they took like, I mean, I don't want to say unattractive women, but unattractive by the beauty standards of the time, and they gave them extreme plastic surgery to like completely alter their appearance? Did I hallucinate this?
Okay, before we answer this question, I just love that this woman is seemingly out in public at like a supermarket or her job. Because in re-listening to this voicemail, I'm like, oh, you can hear people in the background. I don't know if you were at a party and you were like, just remembered the show The Swan, and you're like, no one here will get this, but Lauren and Chelsea will.
Yeah, of course I watched The Swan. It got really depressing. Like, I think I stopped towards the end of the first season, but I definitely watched like at least 5 episodes of that, if not more.
I feel like this is a show that I experienced through weekly episodes of The Soup. Like, that was a show that was too dark, even as a teenager, for me to watch. I needed an underpaid PA to go through the best clips of that show and dispense that to me.
Totally. It was an extremely dark show.
Well, okay, in researching this, I thought that Like a Joe Millionaire, that was a one-and-done reality show. The fact that it had 2 seasons, and the fact that Terry Dubrow, who is the husband of Heather Dubrow of The Real Housewives of Orange County and the reality show Botched, was one of the plastic surgeons on The Swan.
So fucked up. So basically, these women were given trainers, but also extreme amounts of plastic surgery. And they had 3 months to recover from all of that plastic surgery before they would see their new faces and bodies for the first time.
In an apartment that didn't have mirrors, there is a Vice like 10-minute documentary on YouTube. And it was just announced last month that Hulu will be doing a docuseries on The Swan, which I cannot wait for.
Yeah, which is being done by Aaron Lee Carr, who directed Mommy Dead and Dearest, the iconic Gypsy Rose
documentary,
and also Framing Britney Spears more recently.
So you know this is going to be good.
Yeah. And then it was extremely fucked up because the reveal, like, they would walk into this like scary room, almost like they were getting married to themselves. Like, they'd walk down an aisle and then the mirror would be revealed to them.
And then that was only like the first part of the reality show, because the real actual reality competition part was that they then put these women in a beauty pageant.
Yeah, it was so sadistic. I imagine that some of these women probably later ended up having potentially complications from some of the surgeries that they got.
Well, if you think about a show like Extreme Home Makeover and the horror stories you heard after the fact where like all of the housework was actually fucked up and people had to sell these homes and then couldn't sell these homes because the work wasn't legitimate. Because
they couldn't pay the property taxes also.
Well, there was also that. But more my point is that because the work had to be done so fast, it wasn't done well. So I can only imagine what speed running multiple plastic surgeries must be like.
Yeah.
I can only imagine the complications that we're going to hear about in this Hulu docuseries, given what we saw in that Tyra Banks Netflix documentary when the girls went to the dentist and got their teeth all fucked up.
Yeah.
And that one woman had to have like multiple revisions.
I'm sure a lot of them got veneers. Another dark question. At what point do you unfollow someone on Instagram who is now dead?
You wrote the right podcast because dark is where we live.
Okay, I'm just curious. Why do you feel the need to unfollow the dead person? Because I never unfollow dead people.
I was thinking the same thing because the older I get, the more I'm resolved to a strict no unfollowing policy, even with people who are no longer in my life. Like, that's what the mute button is for.
Totally. And I don't understand the psychology of someone that wants to follow very few people and wants to like edit their following. Like, to me, that's insane.
And presumably because this person has passed, you won't be seeing any more of their content. But is it because when you go look at your follower list, you're going to see them and then think of them? Are Instagram handles like phone numbers? Are they eventually given away? Are you worried that one day that handle will pop up with someone else's content?
I don't know. You can unfollow them. They won't know.
Well, then that's the second part of the question. Again, fuck it. We are very sorry for your loss. But are you worried? Because my whole thing of not wanting to unfollow anyone is I do think it is little bitch behavior. But now that I'm thinking about this question, are you worried to unfollow the dead person that it was in your life because you're afraid of what his family or their family or friends might think if you unfollow them?
No one's looking at a dead person's Instagram past the first like few months, I would think, of their passing, right?
So I guess to answer your question, at what point do you unfollow someone on Instagram who is now dead? 6 months?
I don't think you need to. And that is my answer.
Okay. Another advice question. Are we in the advice part of the hotline episode?
I guess so.
I'm currently going through my first big breakup and I'm devastated. Any advice?
The only way out is through. I think with a breakup, it's so hard because you're sad and you don't know how long it will last. And it's easy to convince yourself that it will last forever, but it doesn't. You will get over it at some point. Do not listen to depressing music. Do not do it, especially not You Were Meant For Me by Jewel. Don't listen to that.
Ignore that impulse to listen to Jewel during a breakup if you learn anything from us. I was going to say, you have to wallow. You are allowed to wallow.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely wallow.
However, I think the worst part or the hardest part of getting over a breakup is that transitional period where it's not really sanctioned by your friends and family to still be wallowing. So you have to like do something each day, but you don't fully have to be over the breakup. Like that transitional moment from being in bed all day to like, okay, I have to leave my house at least once is, I think, the hardest part of getting over a breakup.
Well, I think with a breakup, it's good to do something new. Because when you break up with someone, you lose a lot of routines instantly. And it's good to replace them with something else.
Sorry, my mind just went to this person being like, okay, Lauren and Chelsea, I'm going to take a trapeze class.
Why not? And you know what? If you have to move, it's actually a gift. It will suck now, but sometimes moving is the best thing you can do for yourself.
Okay. I mean, that is high stakes. A more lower stakes way to get over a breakup, I was going to suggest watching some good female revenge films. Waiting to Exhale, Thelma and Louise, The Handmaiden.
Waiting to Exhale is kind of depressing, though.
Okay, just YouTube that one Angela Bassett scene from Waiting to Exhale. Okay, next question. Is it tacky to hold a divorce party? For reference, I work in the wedding industry.
I don't think so, unless you got married very recently.
Well, as someone who's just been to a birthday slash divorce party, I co-sign divorce parties.
Yeah, I think it's cute. And I think that Samantha's I'm not having a baby shower is also a really great idea. And more people should do that. Because to Carrie's point, single child-free people do not have these sort of built-in events where they get presents and they get to be celebrated.
Well, I've been meaning to bring this up on the podcast, and this is the perfect segue, but there was a Style Section article a few weeks ago about how people are basically having life celebration weddings to themselves.
Why not?
The world is dark. Things are fucked up. I think we should be celebrating more anything, anywhere.
Didn't Jenny Lewis just marry her dog? Or did I hallucinate that?
Yes, you are correct. Jenny Lewis celebrated her 50th birthday by marrying her dog. Singer and cockapoo Bobby Rhubarb, the inspiration for Puppy in a Truck, tied the knot at a birthday party slash wedding reception last week. And that was in January 2026.
There you go. Okay, next voicemail.
Hey, I'm calling in with a fashion question. I am meeting my girlfriend's mother for the first time. I'm her first serious girlfriend. Her mom used to work for Ralph Lauren and now works at a bridal company and is like a very fashion person. So what do I wear? I'm a femme lesbian in my early 30s and will be in New York City in April. Any advice is appreciated. Thank you so much.
I love how whatever we're going to say is not going to be relevant to this caller who did say that she will be visiting and meeting her girlfriend's mom in April, and this episode is releasing May 1st.
Oh shit, I did not notice that.
But this could be helpful to other femme lesbians who will be meeting their partner's mother.
Okay, less is always more with a fashion person. Do not try to pull a look. I feel like real fashion people are more impressed by like a nice pair of black pants or a simple pair of ballet flats than an it bag. And if you do wear an it bag, they'll probably be like, ew, that's from like 5 years ago. Simple, nondescript, chic, timeless.
You can't go wrong with suiting. A suit, pants and a blazer.
We have no idea what this woman looks like, so that's going to be hard. But wear a little black dress. Keep it chill. Or buy head-to-toe Chanel. And she will be very, very impressed. That I guarantee.
Was that your way of transitioning to our final question, which is our thoughts on the non-Chanel shoe that debuted at the Cruise collection?
Yes. I think it's great. I love it. And everyone is like, where the fuck would you wear this? And I think you're really underestimating like who resort collections are for and like what these people's lifestyles are actually like. Because this is a shoe for someone on the beach or on a boat.
Yeah, it's funny the way that this shoe has gone around in the media. Naturally, it lacks the context, right? They just show the detail shot of this half shoe sandal. But if you look at the look in total, the model is often holding a pair of shoes. The idea being that like you took your Chanel pumps off and you're walking the beach in your Chanel half slide.
Yeah, like is there a function? No, apart from looking fabulous, but that's fine. There's also not a function for a bangle, you know?
I mean, if you think about it that way, there's not a function for much of fashion.
Yeah, but I think that these are going to be huge among a certain genre of person. I'm sure Kris Jenner will have them in every color for yacht season.
Oh, of course. I mean, the way that people sold out Matu Blazy's first Chanel collection, like there is an audience for this.
Yeah, and it's also one piece within a collection that had just such a wide breadth of styles. And every single thing is so detailed. I remember thinking this when Alessandro was at Gucci, and you can't help but be impressed by the scope of what this man is doing.
Well, yeah, my favorite look from this Cruise collection is towards the end, which I can only describe as French widow on a holiday.
Oh, yeah. Really good.
It's like a black gown, and then it's not exactly a veil. It's not exactly a headscarf.
It's a really, really beautiful look. We also saw the Chanel logo, the interlocking C's, blown up and used in ways that are more akin to something that like Moschino would design, which I thought was really, really interesting.
We also have a new addition to the newspaper as fashion genre.
Yeah, which was really, really surprising. It's strange to me that Chanel would do a newspaper dress, if for no other reason that it's like Schiaparelli is the origin, right?
Yes.
And it's weird that they haven't done anything. Dior, obviously, we most associate with the newspaper dress because of Carrie Bradshaw and all of that. And I think they have largely avoided it. Maria Grazia did something newspaper adjacent for a minute, but it wasn't like that major. Like, I think it was like a t-shirt or a bag, or did I just hallucinate that?
I don't know.
They never really did it like full on in that same way that like Galliano did it. And Chanel did it full on with this show.
Going back to that question about the And Just Like That auction and does it feel bittersweet, I will say every fashion season since we've learned that the show is not coming back for a fourth season, when I see looks that Carrie would look incredible in, that's when I get sad again.
Totally.
And like this Chanel newspaper trench, it's like, oh, that would have 1,000% been on Carrie in season four.
Totally. And Lauren and I went into the Dior store kind of recently, and we saw those mules that they made with the giant sort of smushed looking rosettes. And that also made me sad that we would not get to see Carrie Bradshaw in that shoe.
Perfect Carrie shoe.
One season too late for And Just Like That. Also, I don't know if you noticed those Chanel waiters in this collection. I really, really hope that Lana Del Rey gets those so she can wear them in the swamp. Because I feel like no one else would really have a reason.
Oh, yes. I know what you're talking about.
The giant rubber boots.
I mean, this whole look, which is a very 1920s inspired literal bathing suit, like a play suit with a bathing cap. And yes, you're right. These gigantic rubber meant for the swamp boots. He continues to be fascinated with Coco Chanel, the woman, more than the legacy of Chanel, or interpreting and reinterpreting the brand through the woman herself.
I think it's all fun. And I liked the little blowfish and the mermaid gowns and all the sort of more novelty stuff in this show. Really cute. But anywho, we've reached the end of our questions.
We've said it all.
And we will be back next week to talk about the Met Gala.
And we will be back before that on Apple subscriptions and Patreon talking about The Devil Wears Prada 2. What will we have to say?
That's all for this episode anyway. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.